are reviewing...
Well, yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the 1974...
Original.
Yes.
OG. Because there's a new one out, isn't there?
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
No, not yet. No, I'm building up to it. I don't know. Like, there was quite a lot of negative online reaction. So.
Oh, right. Okay.
But yeah, this is the 1974 original. We talked about it the last couple of weeks on the pod. It fitted into the dinner scenes and Hitchhikers, memorably, I think, for both now. Now that you guys, because you hadn't seen this before.
That's right. I can see the relationship between those top fives and this.
And my wife was strongly expressing a preference to watch it. She was like, well, why is it so good? What's important about, you know? So
okay.
We sat down and watched it, and then I forced you guys to watch it as well. And you did watch it, Dan and Peter.
I watched it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Fair play.
On your
phone. Well done.
Because you were really like not going, you were going to dodge tonight.
Yeah, this is right in the kind of slot of stuff that I absolutely do not want to watch. Not because, and I've said this before, I've watched some horror films and I've been really like pleasantly surprised by them.
Mm.
But this was right.
Don't sound like very good horror movies if you've been pleasantly surprised.
Well, no, I just mean in terms of how good the films are. You know, like The Thing was a really good film. And there are some like stuff that would be in the horror genre, like Alien and this, you know, stuff that...
Midsommar. You need to get to, Midsommar.
Yeah, well, but regardless, you have watched, I would say this is the most influential horror film of all time. That's my bold claim. So you have now watched the OG of slasher movies, the one. So,
okay.
Yeah, there you go.
I first saw it at the cinema when they did like the first sort of re-release type thing that what they'd done.
Like 20 years
when I was growing up, it was, I don't know if it was banned or withdrawn or whatever, or it just had a black mark against it as being like a video nasty or however you want to describe it. So it was infamous, but I had never seen it. And then there was big fanfare about, well, we're going to put it back out there. It's going to be on the cinema. So I went to see it.
Well, certainly the marketing was still effective because when I was young and first became aware of this movie, I was still in that like, oh, is this a true story? Is this all?
Well, it opens up. The narrator just scrolls up and it tells you the story of some young people and how their summer was never going to be the
suboptimal
same again.
Yeah
extremely suboptimal
yeah.
And then it opens with a
dead armadillo
you're in a cemetery and you'll see like a corpse on top of another corpse
on top
of like a pyre.
You get the creepy like photos and just the exposure of the fingers and a dog, I think, and an eye.
So it's kind of like there's been a police investigation. They found all the gruesome bodies and there's been grave diggers that have come into the area and they're not kind of sure what's going on. But people were heading up to the graveyard to see if their loved ones were some of the ones that had been affected.
Exhumed.
Thank you, Peter.
The news report is great because it goes on for quite a while at the beginning of the thing. And as it introduces that sets up the rest of the plot in motion. It's also giving this kind of detailing an unusual number of sort of disasters and weirdness going on. There's an explosion at an oil refinery, a cholera epidemic has broke out in San Francisco, there's violence prompted by a local suicide, like setting this backdrop of weirdness.
Yeah.
And we've then, you know, up comes the title, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it's over sort of blurry red and black images of the solar flares and the moon, you know, so it's setting this tone, this background of weirdness and horribleness happening.
And then it does open up onto a road with a dead armadillo and a green kind of camper van pulls up at the side of the
Very
road.
Scooby-Doo.
Very Scooby-Doo. Yeah, yeah. Door slides open and we meet Franklin, who rolls out in his wheelchair to go and do a piss.
Yeah, he needs a piss quite bad.
He needs a quick piss pretty bad. So they wheel him over into a really precarious area where the next truck the next truck that's going to go by is going to spit out some rocks or sound waves
or whatever it seems to
have pushed him over. And poor old Franklin ends up taking a tumble down the bank. Wheelchair follows him, pot of piss over his head, and he's just...
From the get-go, Franklin is kind of...
He's had a bad old day.
Yeah, he's having a bad day, but he's also kind of a sort of undignified burden on the rest of the group. And, you know, that is coming through. You can see he needs a piss. He has a piss in a can and all this stuff. It's like,
It's his sister, I think.
Sally.
Is the reason he's there. And as you say, it's kind of like they brought him along because they've been dumped with him. All these others seem to be paired up, don't they, with a girl.
Kirk and Pam and...
Yeah, they were definitely going to do it.
Yeah. And so anyway, they do end up going to the graveyard.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like their father is the one that's been affected. He has a house that they were meaning to go and see as well. And on the way there, they pick up a hitchhiker.
Well, they go past a slaughterhouse on the way. There's like a horrible stench, don't they? And then that's when they pick up the hitchhiker. Right. I mentioned him in last week's Noms.
Yeah, and he's
fairly
a real piece of work, actually, I thought, Pete. I mean, but we come at this differently. Well, normal in your house, a little bit...
He starts off not quite so crazy, but it does rapidly descend into like mania.
Yeah.
He's all twitching and he's got a speech impediment and he's got a large birthmark.
He had a birthmark on his face,
On his face as well.
Which all painted him out to be a little bit strange.
He's instantly talking about meat as well.
It's more of his behaviour. And once he starts bringing out the photographs he's taken of animals he's killed with a sledgehammer at the abattoir.
Alarm bells
may have been ringing.
Yeah, but Franklin,
if they weren't then...
But
Riggs,
Franklin tries to reach out, though, doesn't he?
He does.
He talks about head cheese.
That's right. And they're talking different cheese, as we all learn. But the head cheese...
Similar product, but...
Is maybe. He digs then a... He takes Franklin's pocket knife off him and digs quite a sizable slice for his hand
into his own hand
that's
after the photo because
they still don't immediately kick him out.
No,
which I pretty sure all of us in this room would have been like, you can get out the fucking van.
Well, they're kind of hippie kind of, and it's like, oh, you know, this fellow love for their man, they pick him up, and
that's
then they're
right.
kind of in stunned sort of silence.
And
Franklin's trying to reach out a little bit.
And then he's kind of asking for a lift all the way home and says, you could have dinner or we could have a look at it. And they go, no, we're in a hurry. And they basically kick him out at that stage.
But he shows them his knife. He's got a knife in his boot.
He starts slicing his knife
and
around.
It's a cutthroat razor.
Yeah.
And he uses it to do some slicing. He slices Franklin's arm.
Yeah.
It's fucking Franklin. Bananas.
Yeah. Well, because he gets enraged because he takes a photo and then tries to charge him $2 for it and they don't want it. So he sets fire to it in the middle of the van.
They chuck him
out and he's like pounding his bloody hand on the side of the bus as they go off and he's like sticking his tongue out at them.
And thankfully, that's the last they'll ever see of him.
Yeah.
And they drive off then.
Well, they need gas.
And find that they've run out of petrol and the petrol station doesn't have any petrol either. They're out of gas. So they're asking about this house, aren't they? They're asking, oh, where's this? And they go, and then this really freaky guy at the gas station just starts putting in major, like, unsubtle blocks to, you don't want to go to that house. What, were those girls? Don't want to go to that house with those girls.
People don't like strangers.
Dangerous.
He tells them that they've got some great barbecue. And they should stick around for some of that. And he's worried about them, and he should be, because the camera is leering at the girls as well. It was like pretty gynecological, that shot of them buying a Coke. Anyway,
no, certainly at least, what was it, Pam?
Pam's got some short shorts on.
Like scantily clad. Mm. Yeah, she's got tiny shorts and like a top with like no back to it, pretty much. So yeah,
are you saying she's asking for it, Pete?
No, I'm saying there's a lot of flesh on display and I was getting a bit of blood in it.
So they buy some barbecue sandwiches from the old man, what the fuck, and depart for the family home, which they arrive at a short while later, accompanied by an ominous brooding score.
Yeah, and they leave Franklin downstairs as they all run upstairs. Poor Franklin can't get upstairs in his wheelchair with no one helping him. So he has a bit of a meltdown and shouts at everybody that... You want the gear and I'm not giving the gear and everybody wants to give.
He blows his tongue out them.
He does.
Like the hitchhiker
He blows
did.
Several raspberries at them in quite an aggressive manner.
And not the most violent thing you see in this film, though.
It's not, actually, because it does ramp up after that. And he points the way where there might be a swimming hole and they see another house, the top of another house. This could be the house that's got gasoline.
Well, it's important because they go off to have sex, clearly. And so, you know.
This I thought it was for a swim. I don't know.
Yeah, well. Well, Dan is
reading those signs.
I was picking up a vibe for sure.
But you know, I'm a great swimmer. I don't know.
No, it's just all that connection between sex and death that was, you know, obviously lots of horror films then took on that as well. So yeah, anyway, they hear a generator, don't they? And they're like, oh, great, we can get some gas. Let's just go and visit the friendly neighbours. And then the camera pans around. And what we probably should say is that there's a kind of raw authenticity to the movie that sometimes feels very documentary-like. But other times it is staggeringly very beautiful, actually, the shots.
What I sort of notice at this stage, because obviously I'm watching this for the first time, knowing that at some point this is all going to go fucking horribly south,
and I'm going to
want to hide and cry, and so I'm fucking on edge. But what I did find is like it's obviously an oldish, pretty old film. It's not evidently it's not a particularly high budget film.
No,
but what it did, you know, with the I remember exactly that bit with like the camera moves. You look into
the house is kind of framed like, through the swing,
and then they've got this bit where it's like weird. They've got some like cars that seem to be like contained in like a sort of a chicken wire garage.
Yeah,
but like the camera sort of like sweeps around it, and it sets the mood very well in the way that you kind of like you see the surroundings and they're quirky things rather than like overtly scary or like sinister things going on.
Well, sometimes it's just tin cans in a tree. But you imagine that
there are probably like it's sort of areas of, you know, the US and other countries for that matter, like remote areas where there are going to be these like houses where there's just like fucking shit all over the land. There'll be like cars and a generator and all kinds of stuff going on. But it definitely, for me, all of that, I don't know if like that was I'm projecting my own kind of fears onto it, or whether it does kind of like setting the scene quite sort of nicely in.
Yeah, well, because
this is interesting, the stuff going on. I was looking at almost everything in every scene to see if there are any.
When's
like,
it going to happen?
You know what I tend to do now with like especially like jump scare like horrors. Yeah,
what
and
the
stuff,
fuck is
like if you see someone's like face and then there's like a big area to the kind of like the right or left of them, something's going to come horribly like a spear through someone's face within minutes. But it kind of just sets a scene of like little bit kind of like, you know, obviously it's gone to fucking ruin.
You say
this
that
place.
Pete, but it does kind of ramp up soon after, is because who's your man that goes into the house first? Is it Kurt?
No, it's the other one. Is it Jesse?
Jerry.
Jerry. He's the one. He finds a... Is it Kirk? Is it Kirk and Pam? Yes.
To her to do it.
He finds the tooth on the floor outside just before he goes in.
Who freaks out and sits on the chair outside.
The porch.
But he's determined to come back with some kind of result. He doesn't want to be there with no gas. And he thinks maybe this is a nice old family. And he trips over what appears to be a small ramp, and a door opens, much like an abattoir, and we meet Leatherface for the first time.
Yeah. He's
a big dude, and he slams a big old hammer right on the top of his head, and it gets him twitching, doesn't it? He does the little twitch.
I didn't know if he was breakdancing or reaction to getting hit on the head with a hammer.
Yeah.
But you've kind of, like, that bit, it was...
Yeah, you've skipped over two amazing bits there. The bit where he pokes his head in and all he can hear is squealing. And you're like, what the fuck is that squealing? And then straight ahead, because it's this big old dilapidated house, and there's like a big red door.
Oh, what a lovely, lovely room of murder you have.
Yeah, murder room. And it's just terrifying.
It's got sort of animal skulls and sort of what looks like pagan type stuff all like hanging on it.
This is just in the hallway, right? It comes down.
That's
in
the wall behind the metal door.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But you don't see the metal door until he goes in.
Yeah.
Because of course, Pam goes looking for Jerry.
She uncovers all the good stuff.
It's not Jerry, it's Kirk. But can we come back to the first Leatherface, because this is the first bit of like real kind of like, I say horror, it's not that gruesome or gory
violence, but, though,
yeah, first bit of like proper violence in the film, and he just sort of like appears and goes and I laughed like genuinely, like, and I wasn't like mocking the film going, oh, this is pathetic or whatever, but that was my initial reaction, because it was quite, I was expecting something far more
chainsaw
kind of, like,
probably.
Well, one, a chainsaw, possibly. But two, something far more kind of like, you know, violent and disgusting and terrifying. And it was like a big like, you know, chunky bloke wearing an apron with a mask on, who just like fucking really tall, like you say, who just like appeared from nowhere and then looked at him, kind of made a grunty sort of noise, then just fucking smashed him on the head with what looked like a lump hammer.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, just slams the door shut.
Yeah, no, but it's interesting because what you're saying is that Leatherface is, there's a weird social hierarchy in the house that we'll get to that Leatherface is kind of at the bottom of.
Yeah.
And that there is some comic stuff that comes in like later when he's got fucking makeup on.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like there is a comic streak.
But
that
bearing
goes,
in mind, I've seen obviously Leatherface images and maybe like the odd clip in passing or whatever, but bearing in mind, I thought like, so he's the main, like, you know, antagonist of the entire.
I thought it was only him before I'd seen the film. That's all I knew of the film was right. Leatherface. So I just thought.
So I was expecting this kind of like, you know, like a kind of like a Mike Myers Halloween type thing, you know, like just fucking like appearing, but looking like immediately like sinister and shit scary. I'm not saying he looked fucking like, you know, something off CBeebies or anything, but it was almost like sort of like comical and a little bit like ham-fisted, and like he didn't know what to do, so he's just whacked this guy on the head with
well because from Leatherface's perspective, this is his house and suddenly some strangers in it, and is he going to attack him? And he's got a childlike mentality, which we'll see, so you know that it's exactly all there. It's
it was an interesting, if anything, it kind of, I think, not put me at ease a little bit, but made me kind of like less on the like fucking terrified about everything that was going to be happening after that, because at least I kind of knew that I'm not explaining it very well, but what I mean is
well, I think
it's almost like something like a little bit kind of like sweet and simple about him, albeit he smashed the guy and killed him with a fucking like, hammer.
You take this genre, you know, years down the line, and they dive more into the like gore side of it and the torture element of it, whereas this is just a quick kill. It's a bang. Yeah. He's gone. You know? Yeah. So it's almost surprising to go back and see that.
Yeah.
It's just different. Right? Yeah. Well, it's a more realistic way of.
It's the first kill of this film, and it's over within seconds.
Apart from the armadillo.
There's which you don't see. There's nothing, may have died of natural causes. We don't know. It's over like that. There's no build up to it or.
Which I was really glad of.
Yeah, the convulsions are pretty horrible.
Yeah, you do get a few convulsions, and then it kind of drags him through, closes the door.
He just slams that door.
Utterly terrifying and horrible, though.
Then she runs in the house, and it's just a house of horrors, and she can't wait to get out of there.
Well, she's distracted by a chicken at first in a cage, which somehow seemed really creepy in the front room. And then when she falls to the floor, she notices that it's covered in feathers and human bones.
Yeah.
And there's a bench that seems to be made partially out of human bones, and there's arms and hands.
She's really cleverly made.
Turtle
actually.
Shells. That was the thing that I was like, that's too much now. Yeah. Turtle shells.
So
is weird.
They
killed turtles.
I gather that it was loosely inspired by real life Ed Gein, however you want to pronounce it.
Tremendous Ed Gaines, yeah.
And when they went into his house, he had that chair he had made, a chair, you know, out of human bones, and he had lampshades that were made out of human skin and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that, I think they really clearly showed the bench,
a niche.
Like front and center, in that it was the
niche.
Whole. So I think it was just trying to tell you that there was real life shit that happened.
Yeah. And it is macabre and horrible, but it's also this incredible bit of production design, the interior of the house. You know, like you said, considering it clearly looks and feels like it was made for absolutely nothing. It feels like there's a lot going on in the frame to tell you more and more stuff about the horrors that are awaiting. Anyway, so she comes out, she pukes everywhere, doesn't she? And the soundtrack is grinding, and she runs out the room, and then Leatherface comes, and she almost gets away, doesn't she? She's out through the door, and he grabs her back and then just suspends her by the back of the head on a meat hook in the killing room, where Kirk is then on the floor and is not on the floor.
He's on
the
table.
Kitchen top, and Leatherface gets the chainsaw out and begins the process of dismemberment, which you don't see.
You just see her reaction.
You don't see that. It's not gratuitous, the stuff here. You don't see the hook going into brain
in her head? I thought it was in her back.
Like, I thought she was in her back, but I don't think it really matters.
Because she's clearly like still alive and can like see everything. I mean, a meat hook through the head is probably.
I thought it just kind of went through like the back and shoulder.
Yeah, like hang it like you would shoulder. A carcass. Like you'd hang up a carcass on a meat hook.
That made sense to me in Leatherface.
Well, yeah. splitting hairs here.
But the chainsaw, you know, when you see him carving the body up, you're not seeing arms flying off. No. You see the chainsaw kind of waved. In fact, it's comical. It looks like he's like standing kind of next to him because he was.
And the rest of the gang then, Night's roars in.
Sorry. You don't see much blood at this stage either.
No.
And I even thought he's wearing this like sort of like horrible coloured shirt and a bit of an apron on it. But even like after that, so you don't see him.
Well, that tells us, Pete, that the cuts were made post mortem.
Right. Yeah.
Because the blood wasn't obviously pumping around to spread.
Yeah. Oh yeah, true. But he only showed a hammer.
CSI Sidey. Yeah.
There would have been a bit of splashback from the chainsaw.
He only killed him like a minute before. So.
Well, the meat was fresh, but
anyway, this is going to go on forever at this rate, isn't it?
Yes.
Back at the granddaddy's house, they start to become concerned about the whereabouts of Pam and Kirk, don't they? And so Jerry sets out to the creek on his own to try and find them.
Never a good idea.
Yeah. Sally and Franklin have a chat. You didn't want me to come, did you? Yeah. She reassures him he did, blah, blah, blah. Jerry gets lured to the house by the generator. This is one of those great shots where he's like walking and the sun is setting and it's really orange and he's just in silhouette. You go, it did look
great,
didn't it? And he sees a blanket that Pam and Kirk had left on the porch, so he knows that the house is suspicious. And then he hears a sort of low moaning, like the sound of a dog or something. And when he walks into the killing room, the hook is empty, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you can hear this tapping, and then he opens it, and Pam just leaps out of the freezer and then screams, and then Leatherface comes in and mallets Jerry horribly to the back of the head.
Yeah.
So that's three of them gone.
Yeah.
Jerry's now a goner as well. I mean, at this point, again, I'm thinking, you know, who is she going to survive? How, you know.
It's a massacre, Pete. It's just an absolute
massacre. Well, it is. I guess they all had to go in order for it to become a massacre. But
Do you see Leatherface is distressed after this, though? He, like, makes all these weird noises and sits in a chair licking his teeth and stuff.
Yeah, he's quite... Yeah, he, like, sits down and you get to, like, to see at least some of his features behind the mask. Yeah. I mean, what are we reading into that? That he doesn't really like killing that much, but felt like he had to do it? I think it's not the first time that he's killed, but it probably... Yeah, I mean, later on in the film, you kind of like see a little bit more about the whole family dynamic and so on. So maybe he's like a bit angsty that he's like made a mess or done something in an impromptu way as opposed to.
Yeah, he gets disciplined quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, true. So yeah, three down.
Yeah.
And then so we've got Franklin who stayed by the camper van and he's with
Sally.
And so it's these two. And at this stage, the three of them have gone. They're shouting out into the darkness and having a debate whether they should go and whether one of them should go. They end up both of them going and going through the undergrowth. And
you're just waiting for it to happen, aren't you?
And
she's pushing
like
the wheelchair. Most, yeah. It looks like hard work, doesn't it?
Really hard work. In the dark, Clint's got the torch. And you just see little bits of light, whites of branches and the blackness and things like that. And sure, his eggs are eggs. Old Leatherface is there waiting for him. And this is, I think, the only time we see the chainsaw take somebody down in the whole film from a live set, which he just goes...
He just lurches out from the side of the path, and then you hear the roar of the chainsaw. And he plunges it
into his chest. I think it's probably the most graphic kill, isn't it?
Although it's with his back to us. So you don't see the chainsaw going in or anything like that. Sally does, though, and she doesn't stick around too long to scream about it.
She does a fair amount of screaming.
She screams pretty much
for the rest
from
of the
this
movie.
Point, yeah, I was going to say, from this point to the end,
she just screams. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a brief moment where she's quiet rational. At the gas station and it's pretty chilling.
I mean, it is, but you think you get, there's still like, you know, half the film to go here. Well, you think you get a bit tired of it. The old vocal cords would... Get a bit overworked.
You're right,
here.
Pete. We're yet to be halfway through, but three of them are dead, or four of them are dead now. And she's the last one running through the woods. She gets to the gas station. Thank goodness for that.
Well,
first of all, she does actually go into the house. It's quite important because I was watching it with my missus, and obviously her first time, your first time seeing this, I don't know whether you knew, but she certainly didn't. So when Sally runs into the house, she runs upstairs first and she walks in on Grandpa and Grandma.
That's right.
And my wife didn't know that Grandpa was still going.
I just thought he was dead, she was clearly dead, and the poor dog as well was
I didn't know until later on that granddad was still going
I don't think he had much left to be honest, but he's still there, but it was a definite psycho you know, the mum was sort of kind of preserved a little bit.
So yeah, anyway, that's when there's running and she jumps through the window and escapes again, and then she runs to the gas station.
You see him up at the lingering at the window for quite a long time, like swinging the chain saw still, with the right hump that she'd gotten away.
She jumps out of a second story window to the floor, just missed those steps. That would have been really bad if she'd have fallen sort of on those steps. But she falls on the nice soft landing of the lawn from two stories. And still managed to run off a little bit, finds the legs again into the garage. And thankfully, the old kind fella that runs the gas station's there and calms her right down, promises to go and get the van.
But the phones are down, so you have to get in the car.
And Leatherface has completely disappeared. I mean, he was literally on her tail as soon as he came into that.
Well, she gets a glimpse of the barbecue, didn't she?
Yeah.
So at first she sort of sat in the back in the room at the garage, and I mean, obviously we know that there's something more to it than that, but she thinks, oh, like, at least I'm sort of safe and this guy's going to look after me. And then she starts looking around and there's like a whole kind of fucking setup going on, and there's some nice sausages hanging there, and there's the barbecue that he was referring to earlier. And I assume you're meant to think that this is like human meat.
Yeah, I assume certainly. Jeez. And then when he goes out, he says, I'm going to go and get the car. You know, the phones are down. We'll go and get the police together. And when he comes back, he's got a broom. Got
rope as well, isn't it?
And a sack.
Yeah.
And then there's quite an amusing, like, scuffle where he beats her with, like, a
broom. He just prods her with a broom a lot.
Yeah. But, like, it looked like some poor woman was, like, properly
She got quite beaten up in this, I think.
I thought that bit was one of the most sadistic parts of the movie, when he's got her in the bag. Oh, yeah, like,
it made the chainsaw stuff look fucking child's play, yeah.
No, but when he's laughing, he bundles her into the car and he's, like, just jabbing her with a broomstick as he's driving. It's horrible.
And we come to realise that, in fact, he is the head of the family. And when he gets back to the house...
I love the bit,
Grandpa...
Just before he leaves, he turns the lights off because he says, the cost of electricity will drive a man out of business. Yeah. Amazing.
That's right. He just jumps back out of the car and you think, oh, something's going to happen. She's going to wake up and drive the van. No, none of that. She's back to the house for a dinner of horrors. And this is that famous scene, which I had seen before this scene.
Well, they pick up the hitchhiker along the way as well, and it becomes clear it's his younger brother.
The younger brother. And as you pointed out a little bit earlier, we learn a little more about the hierarchy of the family.
Because immediately they bring her back to the house, and before they even had dinner, because there's the scene in like another room where the grandpa gets brought down, and that's where you find out that he's alive. They cut her finger.
They give him some of that,
and then he has a little suck on it. And I watched this with Cindy; she'd seen it before,
like a baby,
but she didn't. She said she'd seen it before, but then she couldn't remember like the grandpa bit, and she was like, "Oh my god, he's alive!" So he's just having like a suck on the finger. But, like, also notably at this stage, like, Leatherface is wearing, like, a dress.
Yeah, he's got his nice wig. His, like, housewife makeup on.
He's put, like, makeup on his fucking mask.
Yeah, and you're sort of half laughing at it, but also she's tied to a chair that's got real human arms, like, on it as well. Yeah. And there's a sort of face stretched around the light.
I think that might have been one of her friend's arms, maybe Kurt's or someone's.
Oh. Yeah, because they look pretty new, those arms. At first I thought, oh, she sat on someone, but you never showed that. No. I forgot.
And the old guy, I forget his name, but he says, you know, well, they have a bit of an argument. The mood goes a bit sour. You know, when you're at a dinner party.
I hate that, yeah.
And somebody says something or upsets something, and he says, the hitchhiker's like, oh, well, we do all the killing, you're the... And the guy's like, yeah, I've got no appetite for doing the kill. I can't take any pleasure in doing killing.
Oh, because he says to the, like the hitchhiker says, oh, you're just the cook.
Yeah.
In making him like less like important in the family dynamic.
Yeah, yeah, and
When he says cook, he's talking about human parts.
Human barbecue.
It's always bad when a dinner party goes wrong.
So he does kind of tell Leatherface off though. And you start to understand that Leatherface, when he says, what the fuck is going on?
Well, he chainsawed the door open, didn't he? Which is what he got chastised for that.
He got in trouble with that. But also for the fact, remember, he goes, Well, who's there? Who was that one? He goes, and who was that one? Did you get them all? Did anyone escape? And he goes, no, didn't. He goes, well, you still sort of did the door, but he was concerned that somebody might have escaped, and Leatherface was there. Oh, no, nobody did. Nobody
did.
Yeah,
he sort of shrieking. Wonder what but sort he was of punishment. Scared. It wouldn't be just like getting grounded or something.
No, he was scared, and they were all kind of a bit strange, actually. It was a bit of a strange
They were a bit strange, Dan. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I haven't been anywhere where people have acted like that before. No. So yeah, I guess it would be out of the ordinary.
Unconventional. What is also is unconventional is that they say that Grandpa used to be the best in the slaughterhouse.
Best killer.
And to demonstrate this, they're going to get him to try and kill Sally.
Yeah.
And they keep putting the hammer in his hand.
I swear at one point it did bounce off her head.
It
for
did,
real.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
must have
see like
hurt.
A wound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I thought she was going to pick the hammer up because it keeps on slipping.
It does.
And though her hands are being held behind her back, I was thinking, oh, well, he's going to let her hand go. She's going to grab the hammer and start swinging it around a bit and get out. Well, it doesn't quite pan out like that, but there is a moment where she can escape, and she does. She bolts out. Is it another
window?
She jumps
out the window.
Yeah.
And they chase her up the road. She's running through the trees again. There's a lot of been that, and she gets cut and thorns and whatnot.
For real.
They're running after us. We've done about an hour and 15
minutes.
This is the last bit. To that scene in the house there, it's about an hour and 10, I think.
It's a short film, it was 124 minutes.
We've only got
84 minutes. It was an hour and 20 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's only another, few minutes to roll of the film. And she's running out the house. We've got the hitchhiker and Leatherface running after her, who can't seem to run in a straight line, either of them.
They had to do that for the film because he was so much faster than her.
Yeah.
That to show them running, like making an effort, making it, he had to keep stopping and like waving the chainsaw around stuff. Otherwise, it would.
But there's no excuse for the hitchhiker guy, because I was thinking
deranged lunatic.
There's no way that she's getting to the end of this drive.
But this idea of an enormous, like lumbering guy chasing somebody slowly and never quite catching them, even though it looks like this has now been repeated over and over again. But this was it fully formed for the first time on the screen.
Yeah, because I was actually thinking as he's running around with the chainsaw, you better be careful. That's chainsaws like on.
Wow.
And it's like running with scissors and stuff like that. You need to be fucking careful. That's forgivable, but the hitchhiker guy like just weaving around and like giggling away, and so I mean maybe he's just getting kicks out of the fact that it's
deranged.
A chase,
I mean, it's all over the place.
But yeah, she manages to get out of the drive and onto the road.
Some unsuspecting guy just driving along. It's like, what the
truck driver. He runs straight into the hitchhiker. Leatherface is still after him.
He goes under the wheels.
Yeah.
He goes
under the wheels. He had time to get out of the way of that, but he went under the wheels.
No! And he just waited there saying, no! For ages. Could have just walked out the way. Didn't. Got smashed. Rolled over him. And then Leatherface appears just as the guy in the cab realises she's covered in blood and I didn't hit her. What the hell is going on? And instead of driving off, he just kind of gets out the other side of the cab.
He throws a wrench.
It was like a Benny Hill sort of moment where they're like running around the truck.
Yeah, he throws a wrench at Leatherface, which knocks him on the floor.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
He gets up again.
Well, at this point, he does drop the chainsaw on his own leg and cuts his own leg. And I thought that might be...
Well, that wakes him up.
Part of it, but no.
And Sally, just in the nick of time, jumps in another truck that doesn't want to start until the last second. Then it does. Our hero, truck driver, he's still running off down the street in the other
poor
direction.
Guy.
She is laughing, like hysterically, laughing completely gone insane.
And Leatherface is just
and covered in blood.
Yeah. And Leatherface is just swinging.
Doing a dance. He's doing his chainsaw dance.
Yeah, chainsaw dance as the sun sets on another splendid day.
In
credits.
Texas, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Not, no, it's got a pretty abrupt ending, really. Yeah. I thought that there would be a conclusion of some description, either she gets away and then you see the aftermath or something like that.
There is a sequel, but I've never seen the sequel.
There's loads of sequels.
There's
in fact,
lots and
there
lots of
are. Hang on, I've got them here because there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 sequels.
Jeez, ever decreasing.
Or tie-ins, a Leatherface sort of. Imagine a Leatherface origin.
Some are reboots. I looked into it a little bit, and like some are reboots and some are you know, same universe, but not, or same sort of theme, but not a follow on or anything.
The
like
only
that.
Other one I've seen the second one, and it was just an absolute turkey. So, right.
Why would you watch any more? I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I've done worse. Lol.
You've done worse than what they did in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
Or, okay. Right. Yeah. That was it. Really.
So, what did you think?
Right. So. I can, so all the things that you said at the beginning, I can absolutely see that. I mean, what I will say is the second half of it was unbearable, just about unbearable for me to watch for two reasons. One, because it was fucking just like the stuff that I hate in horror films, like just like relentless. There's no kind of like, you know, relenting from it. It doesn't fucking stop. In every single moment, something horrific could happen. And I like a little bit of respite from the fucking, like, the, you know, like that. I just felt anxious and like horrible, and I wanted the film to fucking end there and then. Mm. The other reason it was unbearable is her screaming. I could not fucking bear it. Honestly, it's just 40 minutes at least of screaming. And I got fucking sick of it. Yeah. Really, really fucking sick and tired of just listening to her scream. Yes, I know that she's being like chased and attacked and tormented, and it's horrendous. But I couldn't fucking It just really like grated on me. Which would it, did that spoil my enjoyment of the film? Yes, I definitely will never watch this again because I don't need to now because I've seen it. I didn't want to watch it in the first place. I think it's a brilliant film.
Yeah.
I do think it's a brilliant film. The screaming, I just couldn't fucking stand. But also, it did. It was unbearable for the right reasons in that it made me feel fucking anxious and tormented. I went to bed. I normally go to bed and my head hits the pillow and I'm out like a light. And I lay there for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it was, just thinking about it. And it definitely like affected me.
Yeah.
Albeit it's a quite pretty old film. It's older than me. And...
Wow.
You know, for it to still, in, you know, 44 years of age, for it to still have like a, I wouldn't say a completely profound effect. We'll see like how my sleep is for the next couple of weeks and maybe it will do. So I can see it is a brilliant film and I can see why it is the, you know, the first of its kind. And then you can see so many things that you've seen in other films that are then like probably like spawned here. I didn't enjoy it though, but you're not meant to like enjoy it. You guys think of me and Dan and Harry as weird because we don't like seeing people get cut up with fucking chainsaws.
But
and
you
stuff.
Don't really see that in
no,
this.
No. But
it's more
but
the idea.
Like, that's what happens in horrors.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's why I don't like it. It's fucking disgusting.
I don't think it's weird.
Terrifying, just... and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Like that's normal. That is a normal thing to feel.
Normal is a spectrum. I don't.
Yeah, but that's not normal to like stuff like that. Surely.
Well, there's all this stuff going on about the Dharma dramatization on Netflix and people's reaction to that.
Yeah, I am. I guess in some ways, if I'd read about this
and
it was real or whatever, I'd be like...
This is a work of fiction. It's grisly, but it is a work of fiction. So if you want to enjoy it like a roller coaster, which is how I enjoy it, that's what horror films are to me. Yes, that 15 minutes at the end is absolutely unbearably tense as the final girl finally sort of gets away. And that's part of it.
And
you're like... Your heart is pounding and your hands are sweaty.
Okay, but so I guess a question back to you then is like, so you've seen this and fucking
someone got that
tons and tons more like horror films than I have. Are you not? Because I got like complete. So my Game of Thrones, for example, I almost became desensitized to the fucking disgusting stuff that happened in that. Yeah. Do you not get desensitized to horror?
I don't actually like. Particularly there's torture Gorno. Porn and the gore stuff. Yeah. I don't particularly like that stuff. That's a bit too much for me where it is just like, oh, let's show somebody's eye being pressed apart just because for the gore value of it. This has just got good ideas, strong themes, brilliantly made, you know, iconic, lasting appeal. You know, this is different.
Dan, you're a virgin as well.
Yeah. As I say, I remembered scenes of this and I think I've just kind of dipped in or walked in when somebody else has been watching it. I turned it off after 5 minutes because it was just fucking boring, really boring.
5 minutes
So then I thought, no, let's give it a proper go, and watched it with the missus, and we sat in and watched it, and fuck me, I was bored, really. Just, and like you, Pete, bored and terrified at the same time. Yeah. Really didn't want to, you know, trying to just don't like it. Just don't like these films. Never going to enjoy them. Didn't laugh once all the way through it. The only bit that caught my attention right towards the end, I was thinking, it's about an hour and 10 minutes in. And that scene where I thought, oh, this is interesting. Like, you know, it's the famous bit where there's a meal around and the grandpa's kind of getting involved in, and it was a few things like that. But really, it was just torture. I knew I wouldn't like it. Really didn't. Hate these movies. I think this is just looks dated as fuck, to be honest. And I do accept your point that it's lots of original bits have come from it. And so it's, there's lots to be taken from this film, but I think they've taken it and they've done it better than they do in this film. It was a real slog for me to get through these 84 minutes and I didn't enjoy any of it, really.
All right. Okay. You said your
I'm
your
on the
wife
fence.
Had
yeah.
an interesting take on it.
That she thought it was even worse than I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, she said, who the fuck chooses these? What the fuck Freaks. Is this? I think she watched Midsommar once with me as well. That was the two films she's seen on the podcast.
Midsommar, I would say way more...
Oh, way more way interesting than this.
No, terrifying than this.
Oh, and terrifying. Yeah.
That film has stayed with me forever. This one, I really like it. I thought it was really good. It just flies by. It's only like an hour and a bit, you know.
Yeah,
and it's interesting. I like, you know, it costs $300,000 to make, and they've done so much with it. And like the guy, the narrator at the start, he just got paid with a joint and stuff. Yeah. That's quite interesting.
Well,
I don't know. I think it's really good. There's not as much chainsawing as I thought there was going to be, but no, second time I've seen it, and I enjoyed it this time as much as I did the first time.
Yeah.
Rick is obviously a huge fan.
Okay. Well, you've got all the opinions of the rainbow there.
There has been a reboot-y thing of it. I believe that it's turd because that's what everyone said around the time. And there's someone that we follow on Twitter that doesn't, I don't think, follow us back. It goes by the Twitter handle of @MotelSiren.
Yeah.
And she has written an essay about Sally.
Mm. All right.
Because the lady on Twitter is an assault survivor. And so she had written a piece about what Sally meant to her, seeing her on screen, surviving all this. It's quite interesting. It's all about other ladies in horror that survived. So it adds a sort of personal touch to it. And it's worth having a look if you want to read that
Jesus,
sort of thing.
I hope she didn't have to go through what Sally went through.
Well, not chainsaws and stuff, but running away from people, you know, someone. And
scary
like, it's
as
fucking
fuck.
Pretty grim, yeah.
Scary as fuck. Yeah. And then, like you, Pete, I just don't like putting myself in a position where I'm not going to feel good for 2 hours and then I'm going to...
You're a West Ham fan, though.
Yeah, no, I've got enough of it already.